Jema. So we are continuing with Words of the Mother Volume 2, which is Collected Works of the Mother Volume 14. And we are going to read part 2. So this book has 5 parts and we are going to read part 2 about the path of yoga. No, this is 7 parts. So we'll read about the path of yoga. Of course, this is a title given by the editors. It's not that the mother wrote like that, the path of yoga. But it has some of the elements of what the yoga is. We had read some last time. Primarily the examiners. To always remember that never to examine means thereby don't judge anyone. But also remember that people may be, not people, but forces are there which are subjecting us to test. In this yoga, there is no test outwardly, but plenty of test inwardly. And that's why one has to be conscious, vigilant, and go through it all. So we are continuing with part 2, the path of yoga. And one very interesting aspect, which is called as tapasya. So so what really is tapasya? The word tapasya automatically brings to mind certain practices like not eating, vrata upvas, wearing one kind of cloth, or reducing your wants to a minimum. First thing is immediately isolating oneself, seclusion. So all this is the way it is understood as tapasya. But tapasya, tapas, actually this is the first word received by the creatrix. In fact, Lord Brahma, he has to create, but he doesn't know what to do. And he hears the words tapas, tapas, tapas. So he engages in tapasya for 1,000 years. What is the tapasya he is doing? Because he is a god himself. He doesn't have to wear a particular dress. We can show him like that. He doesn't need to eat. He doesn't need to drink. So tapasya comes from that origin. It means concentrating and energizing the consciousness. So that's how it comes from the word tap. So heat, often they say, no, tap. So tap is about concentrating, and whenever we concentrate any energy, it engages in kind of tapasya. So tapasya is a concentrated spiritual endeavor, that's all. So it has nothing to do with the dress we wear, the food we eat, how we sit, cross-legged or bolt straight. All this is discipline, which is important, helps. Discipline is an element of tapasya. But then we may do all these things towards a different kind of end. Like Ravan did a lot of tapasya. In fact, if we go through the scriptures, first time when I read it, I said, oh my God, he was a tapasvi. And it is said for 1,000 years he did tapasya. At the end of it, gigantic ego. So we have to put everything in context. This is yoga primarily of surrender, but tapasya is also a very important part of it. Because what will you surrender if you have nothing inside? So concentration here, and concentration on the spiritual goal, energizing of consciousness, so that we can surrender so much which is scattered, we can bring it back, and then we offer it to the mother. So primarily the yoga is about surrender, but tapasya is a part of it, an important part of it. So we read from tapasya. These are, as we know, small little notes or some letters, some different places. All these are gathered from. Tapasya, a discipline imposed by the will for any spiritual end, is tapasya. So what about things which are done collectively? So we should be clear about that. If your will is not into it, one may engage in a kind of collective so-called tapasya for various reasons. It may be simply to impress, it may be simply to put your name, not so many people are there, you also go. Now, that is not tapasya. It has to be done by your will. Your will has to be engaged. Tapasya is actually of the will, primarily. Tapasya, a discipline aiming at the realization of the divine. And then mother says something about discipline, which is so interesting. To be a man, discipline is indispensable. Simple things like being on time. There is a letter of Sri Aurobindo. That being regular and punctual requires a discipline. It's a very good way to discipline the outer consciousness. And I have really found that this is really something so remarkable. You have to reach some place in time. It doesn't matter, whatever place. So what you have to do? You have to organize your activities according to that. From the time you get up to taking a bath, getting ready, everything. Because you have to reach at one place. So in the ashram context, it's so interesting that departments have a time and you're supposed to be punctual. There may be nobody. I mean, for me, it was quite a learning lesson because, of course, being from the Fauji background and a bit of a time maniac, I am as such quite no problem. But I was very happy that people follow discipline in marbling department. There were days when morning nobody will be there to pick up any sari or marble item. But the lady who had told me, Mani Ben, that I joined the duty and so I was supposed to go and open the door. I was very happy. And I have reached 15 minutes before. And to my surprise, I see she has already opened and she is inside. So I said, there are some super punctual people. I used to think that I am the only punctual fellow. But I loved that entirely. So that by the time things, there is a great emphasis on that. One story she told me, Maniban only, about Golkund. So we know how in Golkund discipline is maintained. So she was telling me a story that when she was just about 15 when she had joined the ashram and she got work in the Golkund. And one day she was supposed to be there till 5 o'clock. So at 5 to 5 she started going. And Mona Pinto, wife of Udar Pinto, she saw her and said, "Hold on, where are you going?" She said, "For playground." Now you see, she is going for the ashram activity. So she asked that, "Have you finished everything?" She said, "Yes, mother, just a couple of things which I'll do tomorrow and nothing urgent." And then she asked her only one thing. "What if the mother comes right now to see the things?" Now this was a lesson for her which she remembered, that what if the mother comes? If she comes, what am I going to say? And there was no planning for the mother to come, nothing like that. So then she finished the work and went. So this is how the old time ashram inmates, this discipline was not like you have to show off and you are being disciplined. It was meant to train the consciousness. So consciousness is to be trained, it's part of the self-mastery. So mother says, to a man, discipline is indispensable. Without discipline, one is only an animal. Actually, in Indian thought, this discipline has gone to what level? So I'm going to say something which may sound very strange. So there is a book on physical relationship between a man and a woman. And it is written by a rishi and it's called Kama Sutra. It's very interesting. So somebody told me about the book. I said, okay, let me see. So when I saw the book, it's... the actual act is very, very secondary, very little focus. And there is a lot of emphasis on preparation. I was so surprised happily that, you know, 3 days of preparing yourself, how? Not just outwardly. And that's how it was like meant for basically having a child. The original purpose of sexual relation was to have a child, not for pleasure. And it was so amazing that, look here, I mean, how advanced this civilization was, that to have a child, you have to prepare yourself. And we see that, we were reading the Bhagavad Puran, that how, you know, when Hiranyakashyap and Hiranyaksha are born, two twins, their mother, Diti, she wants to have physical relation with Kashyap Muni. And he says, the time is not right, it is not auspicious. And why it is not auspicious? So says this is the time when Shiva moves around creation. So it's a time of quietude. But she compels, or whatever he got compelled, well, they have a relation, and the result is Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. So there was so much emphasis. Now, why I'm saying this example? Because this is an act which, where the control is minimum, because it's right rooted in the physical impulses. It's a purely, nervous system which is involved, biological nervous system. Now, if somebody can, exercise discipline at that point, it's something amazing. Same thing about Ravan. Same story. Pulastrishi. He says, Devi, this is not the time. So see, I don't know. I'm moved. And all her ambition took the shape of Ravan and Kumkan. So finally, the last child, Vibhishana, they said, no, let's have a proper child. And that proper child became Vibhishan. So even in activities which may seem meaningless, there was discipline involved. Of course, we know the value of self-discipline, food and everything. So she says, to be a man, discipline is indispensable. Actually, it's very interesting, since I'm mentioning this. In Indian homes, we had learnt all this. So when you eat, so it's not like food is served, you start eating. So we all, I'm sure most of us, I remember my home, we all sat quietly, we prayed to God. And then there was a little water in the hand, and you put around the thali, and then you joined your hand. All this is what? It, like, you overcome the greed. After that you eat. It's not like food is, oh, let's go, let's grab it and enjoy, start enjoying. Now in this culture, that has become a norm. And it's so dangerous. Now people often say, why there are so many illnesses? One of the reasons is this. It's not about eating. They ate a lot of ghee, by the way. Lot of ghee. I mean, I know of my relations. They used to eat ghee. But most of them, all of them actually, if I remember, 80 plus was a normal thing. One of them lived to 99. Used to eat a lot of ghee. But very self-disciplined. So your whole system works in a very beautiful way. So she says, without discipline, one is only an animal. In fact, at one place, mother says, animals are better than human beings. And it's so true. She gives the example of a chimpanzee who was given drinks, and he tasted it and then he threw away violently. After that you try to give, no, he's not accepting it. He knew this is not something which is nice, but with human beings it's the other way around. And people will encourage you. So she's saying, without discipline one is only an animal, and I would say worse than an animal. One begins to be a man only when one aspires to a higher and truer life, and when one accepts a discipline of transformation. For this, one must start by mastering one's lower nature and its desires. So people start having yoga of the cells, all that, hold on. Desire. See how well in Auroville, I remember one incident. So in Auroville, there is no money transaction. See how profound mother's ways are. So one of them was telling me, one of the ladies, she said, when I went there, I suddenly felt like buying dresses. So I went. Now, she asked him, how many can I pick up? Say, as many as you want. There's no money. So she picked up 1, 2, 3, 4, 7, 14. Then she, as she was going, then she said, why am I doing it? I can come anytime and pick up. Why am I stalking it? See how mother got one rid of the tendency of greed. How much you really need? You pick up that. See, it's a training. You pick up. If you need more, you will come back again. Now, this is a basic elementary training. So, need and greed, this constantly one has to, should exercise. Otherwise, transformation is a very big word. It can be said that all discipline whatsoever, if it is followed strictly, sincerely, deliberately, is of considerable help, for it makes the earthly life reach its goal more rapidly and prepares it to receive the new life. This may be about anything. Simplest is punctuality and regularity. So sleep, food, in Sri Aurobindo's yoga, there are no extremes. In fact, in one of the places, he says in one of the letters, you must eat regularly, sleep properly, 7 hours of sleep. Sri Aurobindo writes that. that this is not a yoga. So see, ascetic practices, sannyas, or you know, that ascetic practice we'll read next. But tapasya. Tapasya is not that I am not sleeping. Tapasya is you are sleeping regularly, moderation in your fixed way. There is a these students get award by the mother. So 1 year, 3 years, one student every year she was getting reward. And she said, "Mother, but I am doing average." She said, "Yes, but you have maintained consistency." Every year, the average is the same. Right, she's not going up, not coming down. This is wonderful. To maintain, it requires, you know, it something you are putting in because you are maintaining that. So, she says, to discipline oneself is to hasten the arrival of this new life and the contact with the supramental reality. Of course, ultimately this discipline implies all the inner impulses, kama, krodha, lobha, greed, anger, fear, all these are impurities which one has to master, remove. Otherwise, actually in a way one is worse than an animal, because you know, animals at least strike when they are, but in one of the aphorisms, Sri Aurobindo says that, he says that, you know, the difference between man and an animal is, animal does it in season. But man does it in season and out of season. So this is the man's ways. So this is about the tapasya. But is tapasya same as ascetic practices? No. So the mother explains. The true attitude is neither to be an ascetic nor to indulge in desire. The true attitude is to take in all simplicity what I give, to be perfectly satisfied with it, and neither to ask for more or to refuse what is given. So, Nalini Das, one of the letters, I think it is unpublished. Many such letters are unpublished. I mean, they are very personal, small little in his diary notes. So, he sends a letter to Sri Aurobindo. He says, I noticed that in the dining room, the size of the lemon has become smaller and smaller. So, he had the urge to ask, what is this? Give me 2 lemons, something like that. And he mastered it. And then he writes to Sri Aurobindo. What does he write? Sir, lemons have become smaller. Please give more, do something. No. He's saying, I had this urge to ask, with a butcher's knife, remove this from me. Sri Aurobindo's reply, remove, yes, but why with a butcher's knife? Why not with a surgeon's scalpel? See what way these people have gone. When you read their life, there was a time in the dining room. Now people, of course, all kinds of what is going to come, not come. But when you read the stories, Narayan Prasad's book, Life in Sri Aurobindo Ashram. So there was a time when largely it was dal with sometimes some vegetable will be floating in it. So when a vegetable was floating in it, they would say, oh my God, today we had something very special. It was not like now we have, actually it's more of vegetable most often. But that was the path these people have gone. They didn't complain. They didn't suffer from deficiencies. Because all self-discipline conserves the energy. That's the interesting part. And when energy is conserved, if it is turned toward the divine, it utilizes things within in a different way. This is something which I have observed in people, that well, if you conserve the energy, it will take care of many things. Of course, provided it's turned toward the divine. Otherwise, you can turn it into asuric pursuits like Ravana. So she says, what is the true attitude? This is the true example to give, the one that can help the others towards a better understanding of their duties as sadhaks. Remain, my child, simple, quiet, and content, and all will be all right. Recently, someone was telling me a very interesting story. So that person would give money to, you know, different ashram and all. So this lady was sharing a very strange story. She said, I gave to one Swamiji who was head in an ashram. I'm not going to name because it doesn't speak about the originator. It's all kinds of people are everywhere, including Shrivindo Ashram. So then he wrote a letter and made a demand. So the demand was that I want a new mobile which is of a better kind. So she said, I was so surprised, taken aback. I said, now you give, you have spoiled him. Poor fellow was doing good sadhana. Now you have shown him that money can be given, money can buy things. But see, you have to do it consciously. It's not like because, it's not asceticism because you are helpless. That's what Swami Vivekananda told a young boy who at 21 told him, I want to take sannyas, 21 or 20 or maybe 19. So Swami Vivekananda told him, you want sannyas? He said, yes, I want to give everything. He said, what do you have that you can give? Then he told him, go and engage in tapasya. Go and earn 1 lakh rupees in the world. Those days, huh? Then you come back and say, I want to give everything. I want to do sadhana. So it is also true that many people do come even here because of, you know, life here is in certain ways wonderful, in many ways wonderful, in every way wonderful if you ask me. But, you know, that stress of earning and all, but the thing is there. So sometimes they may want their book to be published, sometimes they may want something else. So all the ambition and need for money, all that is going around. So it's okay, but we can't hide it from the divine. So she reminds us, a sannyasi who makes demands is not sincere. You have to observe that this is rising inside me. That's okay, it's not a sin. You work upon yourself and see, observe that, oh my God, why did I ask? I shouldn't have done it. It was a movement of desire. Probably it was greed. So this is how, of course, your relationship will get broken. Be sure about it. If you keep saying, is it need or greed? Desire. So after some time, the person will say, thank you, bye-bye. But this is how a person has to, within oneself, look. It's not about others. You give generously. That's okay. So this is how, she says, to be sincere, a sannyasi must be perfectly satisfied with what is given to him and ask for nothing more. Now, this is a lesson which is very difficult. Because when the ego holds this ideal, it shuns whatever is given. This was a lesson I learned in US, one of my first, second visits. Somebody took me to the market and, you know, buy this. And my nature, I said, no, I don't need. So there was a Russian who was living in US. He told me, you don't mind, let me tell you, you have a lot of ego of this, of rejecting things. I understood what he's saying. He said, you can take it, use it, share it. I said, what you're saying is right, actually. I agree with you that, you know, sometimes when you deliberately shun things, ego can come through any door. Ego of being a sannyasi, ego of wearing one kind of clothes, that's all that is there. He said, I don't think I am ready or equipped. Then I offered that movement, looked inside. So one is that, no, there is a difference between wanting, asking, and receiving what comes quietly, coming from the mother. And then you are grateful to the mother, and then you use it in that way. Don't use it for, oh, now I have money, I'll buy things for me. In fact, much more will come if you don't do that, which is so surprising, but true. In all that happens to him, he must see the divine's grace and be at once happy and grateful to it. And Sri Aurobindo, what a way, grateful for it. Mother and Sri Aurobindo, there were months when he would not get, they didn't know when he came to Pondicherry that whether we will have the evening meal or not. And there is a letter where Sri Aurobindo writes, he says, I know God will provide, but he has contracted a bad habit of providing at the last moment. Mother, as a child, people think that, you know, she grew up in France. Yes, at 15 years of age, she had only one pair of shoes. So what she would do? She is a Raj Rajeshwari, beauty, Param Sandare. So she had a pair of shoes, lacquered shoes. So she will keep painting every week and change the paint. So the shoe looked new. She had found her own way. And then she says, only one day, she said, what a power, you know, that comes with tapasya, how things come. So one day she just had the urge that I wish I had two petticoats. She says, six of them came the same day. Because then, you know, it's that power which keeps the whole cosmos starts, you know, to fill that, whatever you need. And ask the divine. There's another story of Amrita, when mother is asking on his birthday, ask something. After a long time, mother says, you want liberation, transformation. He says, no, mother. She's quite smiling. Then she says, ask anything, something, it's your birthday. Then at the end, he says, two banyans. Mother was very happy. She knew what his intent is. People asked him. Mother was saying, why didn't you ask? He said, don't I know she will give me whenever I am ready and she knows. Do you think I have to ask her for this? It's already granted. So why did he ask two banyans? Now mother is asking me to ask. Now it's a command. I can't refuse that authority. So I have to ask something. So I remembered that of all the things, probably banyans are something which I can genuinely ask. This is the path these people have gone. It's something amazing when you read the life of the disciples, which is so interesting. Moreover, he who wants to do intensive sadhana must be able to isolate himself from his surroundings. Now it may look like, you see, read her sentence so carefully. Oh, isolate himself. I must isolate himself. What she is writing. Must be able to isolate himself from his surroundings and, if necessary, to sit in deep meditation. Now it looks, oh, wonderful. But wait. And if necessary, to sit in deep meditation even on a battlefield in the midst of the roaring guns. Now that's the challenge. That you should be in that state of inwardness, connected with the mother, concentrated on the mother. Doesn't matter where you are. Of course, it's difficult sometimes. Company can throw out the vital inside you. You remember, become conscious that what is it, that part that is flowing, and you remain inwardly conscious. So it's not an outer isolation she's speaking about. She's speaking about the inner sadhana. I do not believe that sadhana in the cave is easy. Everybody wants to go to some place to, as a hideout. I do not believe that sadhana in the cave is easy. Only there the insincerity remains hidden. Because you are not having any contact with people. You see what happens during certain retreats. Nice place. Our retreats are different because place is also wonderful and people are together. But because, see, when you don't interact with people, where is the chance for the ego and anger and desire to come out? Nobody is there to challenge you or to say you may be wrong. That's why marriage is the first sadhana. Because you will be told that you are stupid and foolish. So you have to learn and say, Joy Ma. See the mother everywhere. Then yes, Kali Ma, Joy Ma. Because that's how in real time sadhana takes place. Otherwise, if you are living alone, staying alone, hardly interacting, you will never come to know. So, she says, you can look like a yogi. Okay. Insincerity remains hidden while in life and action it is revealed. All the things get revealed. So she says, you can look like a yogi in a cave. But in life, the humbugging is more difficult. Because you have to behave like a yogi. When you look like a yogi. But in real life, there are challenges. And ashram, to person who may be say all kinds of things, may be working with you in the department. You can't say, I want to change this department, that department. If you change the department, same tendency, somebody else will come. This is so common here. And mother used to say, changing departments is not the way. Change yourself. He is reminding you. What he is or she is, this irrelevant actually. But that person is bringing out something in your nature. You have to observe that and work upon that. To say that that person is doing this to me is not the right answer or approach. Whatever that person is, that's not relevant. We are not here to judge anyone. But he brought out anger from me. He brought out fear in me. He brought out something in me. So that means it is there inside me. He brought it out. So actually, in a way, one should thank. That's how one of the mystics says that that's very nice that, you know, you have pointed out my defects to me. It gives me a chance to look into that. Nindak niyare rakhiye. So it says that keep those who criticize you near you. And in the occult arrangement of things, if you do yoga, you will always have somebody or the other who will criticize you. It's very helpful. Nindak niyare rakhiye. That's how he says, Rahim says. Because he will keep you on the path. He, poor fellow, he will not progress because it's a very bad tendency to criticize others. But doesn't matter, you will progress. So it's unfortunate because you feel that the other person actually is blocking their own progress. Sometimes you feel compassion. But you will progress immensely if there is somebody who is critical of you. So it remains hidden. So that's why here there is nothing like cave and going into it's in the midst of life, right? You know, all the people who are coming, swarming, even entering the ashram, going, coming out. Still you can smile. Very good. Work in ashram department for 2 months. Still if you can smile and have a benevolent attitude towards everyone. Generous ki ma sab mein hai. Then you are pakka. Because any collective work, it's not about ashram. You begin to see something or the other. If you are not doing, before you work, everybody is yogi. When you work, because work brings out, people are all the time, they are not on guard. They are not supposed to be on guard. Inward guardedness is a different thing. So things will come out and you have to observe within yourself your responses to them. So, a question is asked by someone. When I consider the seriousness of this type of severe sadhana, the ideas of my physical and mental weakness begin to frighten me and I find little courage in me. Mother says, one thing we want to know is how much you are eating and whether you sleep regularly and sufficiently. What an answer. The answer to the same question. These two points are of great importance. For a sadhana of this kind demands, in order to bear it, that the mind and body and nervous system should not be weakened by undernourishment and lack of sleep. This answer is the most amazing answer. She's not demanding these things from us. There's so many very interesting examples about this. I remember somebody in Pune, Professor Indra Sen, had gone from here and he had, Parkinson's, and all his body was shaking because of Park. He couldn't sit for 2 minutes without, hand or the leg shaking. He was in late 80s. And some chief justice retired in Pune. He told him, this interaction was in my presence. I was also there. He said, what about serious sadhana? Because they saw that in spite of all this, he has a joy inside. So he asked, question was related. Now I've forgotten the full details. He said, can one be happy when you are doing sadhana? He said, in fact, the more you do sadhana, the more happier you are. So he said, what if one is doing serious sadhana? Obviously, he must be experiencing depression. So Professor Indra Sen says, the more serious you are, the more happy you are. Because serious means something very different here. Serious means you are more connected with the Divine Mother. It's not about external seriousness. People may not understand. So this is what he said. And she is saying, sleep well, eat well, don't think so much about all these things, that don't be frightened. And she makes it very clear, it is not by fasting, but by improving the will that one obtains the truth. So, well, these are mother's words. Whatever way people want to take it. You said that X was doing mischief with the children because in your mind the idea of sadhana is associated with quietness, stillness and meditation. But the more you stay here, the more you will have to realize that it is not only in meditation that one can reach the divine consciousness. You will learn that one can remain in contact with the divine even while playing or doing gymnastics or walking or doing anything. At every moment, you should remember the divine and try to remain in the divine consciousness. I have seen actually a letter written by the mother to someone, you don't need to meditate, it is enough if you work. It will take you to the highest realizations. So many places, mother has emphasized this. Because in that dynamic movement, if you have to do something special to be in connection with the divine, it is still an imperfection. It's fine. Mother has not said don't do, one has to do everything. But important thing is that while I am active, then also I must be in a state of remembrance and offering. So she makes it very clear that here sensibleness is indispensable. And the integral yoga is based on balance, calm and peace, and not on an unhealthy need to suffer. Of course, people may interpret, oh, need to suffer means give suffering to others. No, no, that is understood. That is a rakshasa. But suffer yourself and become a martyr. And no, that's not necessary. Sadhana is joy. In fact, all depression and suffering is a sign that there is insincerity. That's so true. If I am suffering, the problem is inside me. And the more I am suffering and the more I am depressed, the more I am deviating from the divine, I have put a big veil has come between me and the divine. A veil of desire or ignorance or whatever it is. As long as it is an austerity, there are reactions. If you do forcefully, okay, from tomorrow, Dilip Kumar Roy wrote to Sri Aurobindo. He writes that I am thinking, because he had a very difficult vital nature. Sri Aurobindo has written very large vital, very expansive vital and what not. That's a different story altogether. Eventually that vital took him away. That's a different story that mother and Sri Aurobindo never left him, but that's a different story altogether. So he writes to Sri Aurobindo, I am thinking to control my vital from tomorrow. I am going to wear only one color cloth. I am going to shave my heads and I am going to, you know, eat food only. Something he said like that. Sri Aurobindo says, my God, I am horrified at the prospect of seeing Dilip with shaven head, bitten by mosquitoes, all red in color, and coming wearing only one cloth. What has happened to your sense of beauty and taste? And then food, eating food only once. My God, you will grow so thin, I'll find difficult to recognize. It's a very humorous letter. He says, you don't need to do any of these things. Balance is important. So, she says, as long as it is an austerity, there are reactions. Austerity means you are doing something forcibly. When it becomes an imperative need, it is good. That I must do it because of mother, because, you know, I need to have some mastery over my nature. Sometimes doing it just because it is to be done or because people do it. You know? You see how Karwa Chauth has evolved in India. Now there is something like you can do it for give a closer. So you do it, after that you don't do it, you have to do every year. So you have done it one day and I have forgotten this, some word like purna or something. You have finished it. So yeah, it's done. You don't have to do it every year. And I know actually so many instances where the poor lady was doing faithfully Karwa Chauth. And yet the husband left earlier. So now, you know, all these things. So you must understand, the entire thing was in the Western Belt where people were going to war. And so whatever it was in there, it was not the fasting which helped. It was, they were really, really worried about the man who is going on the border. That aspiration, that wish to see him alive, that helped. It was the warrior clan, Rajputs and, you know, Rajasthan and Haryana and UP western borders. You will see all this very prominently. If you go down south, they don't know. Because it has no relevance. So, but people continue. So the person asks, should I spend some time in solitude? This is a itch which comes to, I think, almost every sadhak. I suffer from it time and again. And it goes away within 1 hour, mother says, do your work quietly. And I myself think, where can you go after ashram? See, anywhere in the world, the moment you think you are away from the samadhi, it's like you are a dead man. Work, if she sends, it's okay. But where will you go? How long can you stay? It's really that contact is so wonderful. It's not about being an ashramite. That's not important. But the touch of the samadhi, the presence of the mother that you feel in the atmosphere. So, somebody is asked, should I spend some time in solitude? Satprem used to go. He would get an Amazon itch. He would want to go to forest, want to wander away. And once mother tells him, she says, you know what is your problem? You are suffering from a disease called ego. This is straight, point blank. It's nice of him that it's there in the correspondence in agenda. So you get this urge, itch. And she never stopped him. She said, oh, it's okay. Always blessed, because she understands human nature and its many sides. But, so, should I spend some time in solitude? Mother says, it is the old methods of yoga which demand silence and solitude. Whenever people would come here and ask that, mother would say, Shobindu would say, go to Raman Ashram, that's a better place for this. Here there is work, because there is a pressure of transformation, tremendous pressure. The yoga of tomorrow, 71 she is writing yoga of tomorrow, that means people were not yet ready. There is a time when someone from the playground wrote to the mother, I'll tell that who's someone, Rishabh Chanji. Wrote to the mother, and see, he's such a deep person. He says, I'm so happy that they played your music today. Last time they had played some film music and all. So mother says, but what's wrong with that music? I heard that music. It was women saying goodbye to the soldiers when they were going to fight. So he didn't know what to say. Just imagine. Even now you can't do that, okay? But that's how the mother took all the nature and tendencies. What is important is the inner focus, turning all things into that. So plenty of examples like that here. She says, the yoga of tomorrow. This is letter of 71. And she has said this time and again. She said, in work one has to find the divine, and she says, the more I advance, the more I see the yoga, the more I can say that this Shobindo's yoga is best done through work. Because all the parts get involved. When you work, all the parts get involved. The yoga of tomorrow is to find the divine in work and in relation with the world. Look within yourself. Reflect upon it and tell me what your choice is. How wonderful this is. According to my experience, people fall into tamas when they go into solitude. This is so true. All this 2-hour meditation and all, very often. There are some genuine people who can do that, without a doubt. But very often, people sleep off. I personally know of people who sleep off. And then they get up, or after the so-called, they have to sit somehow, and then they go off to sleep. Because tamas is entering into the body, you are forcing yourself to sit. So here she says that this is To be by oneself very much needs a certain force of inner life. It may be better to vary solitude with some kind of its opposite. But each has its advantages and disadvantages, and it is only by being vigilant and keeping an inner poise that one can avoid the latter. So she is not saying that, okay, need for solitude would be there. Best is inner solitude. If you cannot do it, it's okay. You can do that time to time. Entire physical retirement is seldom healthy. Although a temporary retirement is often helpful. Sri Aurobindo writes that in Synthesis of Yoga. That sometimes a temporary retirement. But the main thing is the inner detachment and complete turning to the divine. This is the most important thing. Then she says something about meditation. When you sit in meditation, you must be as candid and simple as a child. It's not a process, it's a joy actually. Not interfering by your external mind, expecting nothing, insisting on nothing. Once this condition is there, all the rest depends upon the aspiration deep within you. And if you call upon divinity, then too you will have the answer. The increase of time given to meditation is not very useful unless the urge for meditation comes spontaneously from inside. There may be days or moments when you can do that. But generally from what I have read from the long literature, there are people to whom mother said, get up at 1 o'clock in the night and meditate for 3 hours. Debuddha was there. But generally speaking, 20 to 30 minutes twice or thrice a day is the standard practice. Basically, you get into that meditative mood. And then you are back to work. That's the whole idea. So it should not be an arbitrary decision of the mind. It should grow from within. To keep constantly a concentrated and ingathered attitude is more important than having fixed hours of meditation. I remember one incident, and it has left an impact upon me. So many people I have met. You know, people I've seen meditating and all the great ones and many people. But once I remember, I was walking on this dispensary road. I was not yet here. And Maheshwariji was with me. And Pranabdha was coming from the other side. I didn't know who is Pranabdha. I had not met him. Of course, I had heard about him. Suddenly he stopped and said, Dada. So I understood, so I did pranam, and he told, he introduced me. But I remember seeing him at that moment, it was such an ingathered, concentrated attitude. I have never seen that kind of ingathered concentration ever in anyone in my life. I have seen quite a bit. I have seen people sit and meditate, and even meeting Dada, whenever I met him, always this was the impression that he is inwardly very deep and very solidly, intensely concentrated with the mother. Very amazing. Of course, I'm sure Nalnida, I have not interacted with him that closely. But that kind, I've sat and meditated with Champak Lalji. But with Dada, it was something. Open eyes and he's interacting. But one could sense that here is a person who is connected in the very depths. And it's not for nothing that mother, you know, kept him so close. Whatever people's opinion may be, that's not relevant. At the end, what counts is what divine thinks of you. Period. So, what about experiences? It can be useful for a time to have certain inner experiences, but this attitude is not to be kept permanently. As it is only a partial truth and far from the whole truth of the integral yoga, the true revelation is the revelation of the divine. In the beginning, many people have experiences. This is so true, something or the other. But as you grow, you start coming in contact with the mother. There are subjective changes. Peace, light, growth of wisdom coming from inside. And it's so amazing. And it's not taking place like an objective experience outside, because now you are in an inner ground of being, becoming one with the mother. I mean, I would say to remain always genuinely happy despite everything is a great experience to have. It's almost like benchmark. No rule can be laid down about suggestions and voices coming from within. Your within may mean nothing. You must train your observation and try to distinguish between the sources from which the suggestions come. The voice or the suggestion may come from your own subconscious, or it may come from something higher. If you know from where it comes, then you can decide whether you should follow it or not. It's not like whatever suggestion comes. You see what happened to Tirupati. Complete. He was one of the four pillars of sadhana. And so close to Sri Aurobindo. He lost his balance. And he would get these suggestions that you want me to come. And Sri Aurobindo is sending a telegram. Don't come. Still he is coming. Sri Aurobindo says, strange fellow. I am writing, sending telegram. Don't come. Still he is coming. So you know what his logic is. You are testing me. You are writing outwardly, but inwardly you are giving me a suggestion to come. This is what to say to him. And just a few more. The need for a complete. In an age like ours of the Guru, in an age like ours, success alone counts and the material satisfaction of things. However, an ever-increasing number of dissatisfied people are seeking to know the reason of life. And on the other hand, there are sages who know and strive to help suffering humanity and to spread the light of knowledge. When the two meet, it's important, seeking humanity, not like all kinds of, you know, you pay up and sign up. When the two meet, he who knows and he who wants to know, there springs up a new hope in the world and a little light penetrates the prevailing darkness. Exactly one of the phrases in the Upanishads. I'm forgetting it, that it's in the Kathopanishad, where Yama tells Nachiketa that rare it is to find a seeker of knowledge who really wants to know. And when one meets such a seeker, then, you know, life is beautiful. The Western mind always finds it difficult to submit totally to a guru. And without total and unquestioning surrender to the Guru, his help to you is paralyzed. You can't play it both ways. My way, okay, go your way. Surrender means surrender. And it's so difficult for the Western mind. And when the more you surrender, the more the path opens. And surrender means not just words. Like somebody told mother that surrender I have done last week, now tell me something else. It is a lifetime sadhana. That is why generally I advise Westerners to find the guidance and the presence within themselves, because they cannot surrender. It is the ego. It is true that this process is very often open to uncertainty and self-deception, mistaking some voice of the ego in disguise for the divine's guidance. And then she says, absolute sincerity is the safeguard. If you have faith and confidence, it is not the human form of the Guru that you worship, but the Supreme Lord who manifests through him. Finally, the disciples judge the forms by the Master. Others judge the Master by the forms. So like, as I said, that somebody, mother said something and kept close. Now, you may have your own idea or understanding. The fact is that the mother gave him this work, kept close. He knows better. So we judge the master by the forms. Oh, this is how it is. What will be the ashram? I'm giving an example of somebody whom mother mentioned. Didn't want to come, but he finally, someone said, Harere, you come, she will take darshan, don't worry, he'll give you darshan. And he came. He was sitting in international guest house. And when he saw there's an Ellora or Ajanta painting, something, I don't know whether I have not noticed it, but it used to be there. And he saw and started thinking, half an hour, how can this be here? This is an ashram. He had his own ideas. And then he went away without seeing the mother. So you see, because he judged the master by the forms. Are, this is here, that is here. Yoga, somebody asked me like that about yoga, because after 5 years he wanted to leave and go somewhere. I said, bhai, mati mood ka kya bol sakte? That is how even Ravan judged. Oh, Ram, he is coming with monkeys. No, now you see where the problem comes. Somebody who is coming with an army of monkeys, what are his credentials? He is not coming as an Ayodhya Rajkumar or Raja. Then Ravan would have thought about Sandhi. He said, coming with, that's how people often see us. And they say, oh, Madhura Shrivito. But our worth is only because Mother and Sri Aurobindo have accepted us. That's it. I often say, don't judge them by us. We are products in the making. Some are getting beaten. Some are put into the hell, heat of, you know. Others are getting nicely, you know. They're a little bit better. They're going through the cooling process. Some carving is going on. But Mother and Sri Aurobindo have accepted. That's the end of the story. I remember one very interesting dream vision. It's a vision of someone. So this lady sees in her dream, very early on in the yoga, that there is a line and there is a person who is very angry at the end of the line, and he is accepting, rejecting, and they know he is Matsavtar. Now the first manifestation of divine in life, Matsavtar. So anger and all is understandable. It takes full blown in. But on truth basis, after Matsavtar fought a fight and drowned an asura, so when she goes there, his eyes and all are so this thing, and then suddenly his eyes fall on the ring in her hand. And he says, oh, Sri Aurobindo. Okay, go. Real experience. Oh, Sri Aurobindo, okay, go. Medananda has, means you be fine, you don't, you're fine, you're safe. There is another Medananda writes, I myself had this experience, Sri Aurobindo, you go into some interplanetary things and suddenly Sri Aurobindo. Medananda had a similar experience. He used to go out of the body and he got lost. He doesn't know how to come back. And then two beings meet him and they see that this fellow has lost his way. So he's trying to explain. Earth, they don't know. There are so many earths, so many systems. So he doesn't know what to say. Then suddenly he says something about Sri Aurobindo. And he says, oh, Sri Aurobindo's earth, go. And he finds himself back into the body. So that's the difference. You know, when you make your identity completely with the Divine Mother, then you are safe. So that's the importance. So she says that, one is people judge the master by the forms, and other who judge the forms by the master. And finally, very, very important to remember, and all the centers must, everybody should remember, well-known or unknown has absolutely no importance from the spiritual point of view. One man who earnestly pursues the yoga is of more value than 1,000 well-known men. So recently there was this thing going on in Auroville. They wanted some of Sri Aurobindo's things to be spoken of by great, you know, like Amitabh Bachchan and all that. They asked my opinion. I said, I laughable opinion. What are you trying? I can understand somebody with a good voice, but who is steeped in yoga, because, you know, then it makes sense. Some vibration will go. So this is how people look at it. So she says it has no importance. And mother has given such examples of spending 2.5 hours with a child who was crying, ink had fallen, rubbing it. And whereas the minister was waiting in the queue, finally he went away. And the disciple asked, she knew, of course. Obviously she didn't want to give the darshan. And so then mother was asked, mother, you know, he could have been of so much help. Mother says, oh, help? I know all that. This child has given herself to me. So she was spending all the time on that child. taking care of. And of course, he knew about what's happening outside. Gandhi, Shobindu never met him. And there are a few other saints I know who never met him. But if you go outside, oh, Gandhiji bhi aaye the ashram mein. It may not necessarily be a big credit if you go from the truth point of view. So all these have no importance. Of those who possess a true value, the power of yoga will increase the value. Any capacity, quality, yoga will increase it. But from one who has only some false appearance of art, even that appearance will vanish or else lose its appeal. You can't fool the divine. Touch of the divine will augment truth, remove whatever is false. Divine Mother, do you wish us to try and intensively spread the yoga in America? I think I know the person, but I would. 1966. Imagine some guru would say, yes, yes, please do that. It'll be very nice if Americans can turn. What does Mother say? Yoga cannot be spread by any exterior means. You have to live it. And then things happen spontaneously. But to think that you are going to convert and spread the yoga, have more disciples. And the last one. May I ask your help in dealing with this feeling of loneliness which appears when I am alone? Common thing in sadhana, because all your supports are snatched away by the grace. If they are not snatched away, that means one has not entered the path. I mean it. There in Sri Aurobindo and the mother's writing. If you, as long as you are carrying the whole world with you, okay, fine. Enjoy life. When all supports are, there is a very nice Urdu couplet. Let me just say that. Sab nakhat ama ke dub gaye, sara akash tumhara hai. So the person is invoking the sun. Nakhat is nakshatra, the stars, constellations. He says, all the constellations have now sunk. O sun, come. The whole sky is now waiting for you. So this is a phase when one has to go through in yoga, when all outer support is gone. It's a difficult phase, but it is an indispensable phase. I'm not saying gone away means something, somebody dies and all this. The support goes away. So you learn to lean only on the divine. There is a writing of the mother that when you come to the yoga, sometimes you have to hang by nothing but a thread of faith. Your relations, your family, your country, your everything lies there, the divine. So she says, those who feel lonely in the world are ready for union with the divine. Tema.